100% used to agree with the fact that you do not need to go too far on these college athletes. Like, don't dig into them too far. They are kids. The moment that you start making anywhere from 4 to 25 times the amount of the average American, you get it. You can get it full blast. Drew Aller's making at least $3.2 million from Penn State alone. You add in Nike, you add in Venmo, you add in American Eagle with Travis Kelce. Drew Aller's probably well over $5 million this year. Yeah. You're not going to get any too much sympathy from me when you're making that much, and you know you're going to have to get it. That's not to say that I still, you know,
I'm still.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You still, you know, when people are sending around those fake DMs of him, I'm sure you've seen that one. People are like creating fake messages from Drew Aller, and it's very.
I haven't seen that one actually.
Oh, you're gonna have to look that up. It's basically. I don't know how much you allow on this podcast, but they basically, it was like him like saying some very, we'll call it naughty things with a girl, even though he has a girlfriend. And that's what made it kind of worse. And was just all these sexual things, basically. And it was obviously created through AI. But, you know, everybody thinks everything's real. So it's rough what he's going through. And, you know, it's hard because Gen Z, like, we're so conditioned to be on our phones. And I think that's what's difficult now for a lot of these athletes. People will say, oh, just, like, put your phone away. Like, people are literally addicted to their phones in my generation because that's all we've ever known. So even though you are a star athlete and you think, oh, like, he's got better things to do than surf Twitter and Instagram, not really, because that's what he's done since he was 8 years old. Shit. So that's what you do. And so, like, Drew Aller's all over Twitter, all over Instagram, just getting shitted on right now. And, like, that doesn't help at all. I mean, James Franklin just yesterday, he was like, I think the trip out to UCLA, to California, is good for us. Yeah. Like, we need to get out of Dodge and get some time away from this thing.
Yeah. Damn, dude. So that was one of the things, like, I was thinking through. I actually made a couple Twitter posts about it, like, when this NIL thing and revenue sharing started really kicking off. I really did feel like when these college players, 18 to 22, 23-year-old, you know, kids, and you know, I'm 38. When I think about a 18-year-old potentially making millions of dollars, the first thing that goes to my mind is like, holy shit. I can't imagine the psychological struggle that individual is about to go through, not just because of how many distractions having that much money introduces, but now the amount of responsibility that comes along with that, in addition to already doing something that's very difficult and competitive, which is being a college D1 athlete.
Right? Well, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please.
No, I think you're right. And it adds so much more pressure just naturally because you are worth that amount of money. I mean, you think about it like this. Like, in the past, a 5-star recruit, you always gave them more opportunity than, say, a 3-star recruit because they were labeled a 5-star. They had all these expectations. But it wasn't that big of a deal if a 3-star beat out a 5-star. If he was just better, you say, all right, let's play the 3-star. Well, now it's a lot different when you pay someone, say, $300,000, a 3-star that's coming, or not even, you know, $150,000, and you pay that 5-star $2 million. Well, now that investment is a lot different. It's not just the same scholarship anymore, and it's all the expectations were bigger, but, you know, whatever. He's not good. Now it's we just sunk. We had this one donor put all of the money. He said he's going to give us $2 million, this donor. We sunk it all into Nick Singleton. Let's talk about it. Penn State's running back that is supposed to be a star in year four, and looks like one of the worst running backs in the Big Ten, if we're just going to be honest. And that's difficult for coaches to deal with because it's like, hey, that investment that I put into you was so great. I got donors that put money into you. And now it's so much harder to just bench you or sit you down. So you think psychologically how that works in the guy's head. Not only is it like, oh, I had all these expectations. I was a 5-star. I mean, that was already hard enough. But now, I mean, yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to feel bad for them because their bank account and what that number says, but still, they're humans. And that adds on to it. Like, oh my God, they spent all this money on me. Like, I'm not performing. And then you're overthinking. And I think that's a big theme with college football. Even now is these guys they're overthinking, they're thinking too much about it. And it's causing people to really struggle. I mean, you look around college football as a whole this year, everybody that, for the most part, like all these quarterbacks that had high expectations, a lot of the teams that had high expectations, the two teams that returned the most starters, Clemson and Penn State, kind of suck and win right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that was going to be one of my questions, actually. Do you think that teams are not going to have a tough time making the proper personnel decisions, because the starters that started the season that are now in this NIL age getting disproportionately more money than, let's say, the backups. Like, how much harder is it for the coaches to say, I need to bench you? Or at the very least, hey, there's going to be like some sort of, I don't know if threat is the right word, but like some accountability that says, okay, like, we know we invested a ton of money in you, but if you're not performing, you're not performing. How much harder does the money variable make that decision?
Yeah, I think it makes it significantly harder, because like I said, it's so much more difficult to say, hey, it's week five and we're going to bench our star running back because the backup is just simply better. But we want to keep giving this guy, give him one more opportunity. Dude, we gave him $1.5 million. The backup's only making $300,000. Like, we got to give him another shot. We sunk way too much into this, and it's still not working. And it's like that ex that just keeps coming back, and you just want it to work. And you know that it doesn't work. You know that fundamentally something is wrong with his or her head, and you're like, damn it, it's not going to work. But you just keep trying. And that's kind of how it is when you're spending these big bucks on a quarterback, on a running, whatever position it is in college football. It just makes it so much more difficult. And then, like I said, you have the pressure from the donor. Because now I have a donor that put up $1.5 million for that star running back. And I basically, now I'm saying, all right, we have to bench him. Like, he's not good enough, and the backup is just better. So that's not only a problem this season. You got someone mad this season. But next season, what about when I want to pay that backup running back the money that star was getting last year? And now I got to go to that same donor. Can I have $1.5 million? What'd you do last time? The last time I gave you $1.5 million, the guy got benched? I'm not giving you that money again. So that's even a new battle that you have. And that's a battle you don't have in pro sports in the NFL, because the cap is the cap is the cap. And it's not every single year. And that's kind of the good and bad part, I guess, for these college football players, is that it is free agency every year. And you can, if you're a star player going into year two, and you have, no matter what, you have two more years in college football, and your expectations are huge in year two, and you get paid $2 million and you suck wind, well, you come back for year three, they're not going to pay you $2 million unless you decided to sign some type of contract. But most guys up to this point, especially that were already in college football when NIL really took off, they're kind of just going year by year. At least that's how it has been here at Penn State. And so I think that's difficult, because you feel like you're in a prove it year. I mean, you talk about in the NFL, you sign a 4-year contract, and maybe the first year or two doesn't go very well, and then year three and year four, you turn it on. You're going to get rewarded. No one's really talking about that year one and year two, but that's hard in college football, because it's a prove it year every single year for you. So at the same time, they are kids, and you're dealing with a ton of pressure, a lot of money. And then, we can talk about it. Like, I know so many guys, their uncles, their dads, their moms, their cousins. It is bad environments that these guys are put in. Ooh. Where their families know, they know when they got that 5-star label on them now, that's worth well over $1 million. We're treading into well over $2 million for a 5-star at this point. All the families know that, all the distant cousins. And then you start getting called up, hey, nephew, I need $500 here. I need $1,500 there. And it starts to get real toxic. And a lot of 18-year-olds don't know how to manage that. So they're going to do the wrong thing. So they got friends back at home where it's like, oh, yeah, I want to bring my friends up. I'm going to pay for all 5 of them to come watch me this weekend and get them this. And we're going to go out to dinner here. And like, guys just don't understand how to manage it. And I think that's the hard part of giving these 18-year-olds, even 17-year-olds, this amount of money. It's too much freedom. And I'll just tell you, like, here at Penn State, they try to give us some education, but there's no one making sure that you're paying taxes. I'll tell you this story.
That was going to be my question, is like, what is a support system for that type of financial like change in those individuals? Like, what is the likelihood they're actually going to execute against that wealth properly?
Dude, so I'll tell you the story. So we come back from the 2022 Rose Bowl. So it's January 1st, basically, of 2023. And Penn State was a little bit behind on NIL and really paying their players. So I'm talking to my boy, Landon Jackson, who's in the NFL now, and he's down in Arkansas, obviously SEC school. And he's like, yeah, man, it's going well. And mind you, NIL became legal July 1st of 2021. But that first year, unless you were a huge name, like, you really didn't make money, because no one knew what it was. Businesses weren't really in it. So I talked to my boy Landon down south, and he's like, yeah, just bought property, just bought a house. I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, I'm making a $2,500 a month stipend, and that's it. What are you talking about? You bought a house. And he's like, oh, yeah, dude, like, we're getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars down here. And I'm like, oh, heck no. So I go in and I'm trying my best to help out the NIL efforts and all that stuff. And next thing you know, about 2 weeks after the Rose Bowl, we all go to a team meeting and they're like, hey, you guys are going to start to get paid. So you get your whatever $2,500 stipend. And now on top of that, you were going to get anywhere from $2,000 to like $4,000 a month, which, okay, honestly, at the time, like, that's a lot. Like, you have no expenses. They pay for your housing. They pay for your food. So it's like, imagine just you're in college and you just have like $8,000 a month. Yeah, exactly. It was, dude. That's what most of the people were doing. When I first got to Penn State, that was basically when the GameStop short happened, when I got to Penn State. And that got me into stocks and crypto and all. Yeah. It was a crazy time. I'll never forget that. So they sit us down and they tell us, all right, you guys are going to start making money. And obviously the stipend up to that point was not like taxable or anything, because it was for room and board. It was all that type of stuff. So they tell us, we're all happy. We're like, we're making money. And the last slide says taxes. And everybody, you kind of hear groans and like, and we go into the locker room as soon as the meeting's over. And all I hear, a couple guys are like, fuck that. I ain't paying taxes.
Yes, you are.
Yo, me and my boys start dying laughing. And we're like, you think you got a choice? Yeah, that's hilarious. So I will tell you, though, I expect it to happen. And guys, it's getting a little bit better just because there's so much money involved. But there's going to be problems of guys getting in trouble with the IRS because they're just not paying their taxes because there's no education. Like, you're coming right out of high school, which we all know there's no type of any of that education. You learn the most worthless, pointless things. Let's just call it what it is. There's certain things that are good, obviously, to learn. But there's so many more things that we could be doing to educate our children in high school that you do not do, or almost every single school district does not do. And so you don't know how to manage money. And, you know, especially in like it is what it is. A lot of guys on my team came from not so great backgrounds. So it's like, now not only do you not know how to manage it, you've never really even lived a life like that. And it's like, what the heck do I do? And so, you see, and you know, rightfully so. I mean, guys are making millions of dollars, so they can drive nice cars. But you see some of these guys and they're freshmen, and it's like, you really bought that car and you didn't even buy it. You're leasing a car that's $120,000 and you're signing yourself up for these ridiculous car payments. And who knows? Like, for me, I had to medically retire and I didn't even have that night. I had an Audi Q7 and it was like, I think my car payment was like $750 a month. And I was hurting off that.
You're a big dude, right? I mean, that's a car that you need, right?
Yeah.
6'4", 6'5", like, you're a guy.
I needed a big car. And so that's what I got. And I wish I never did it. And I finally got rid of it about 6 months ago, dude. But that's like the number one thing that's happening is these car leases that these guys are getting into. Yeah. And then they stop playing and they don't understand, like, you're making, let's say if you're an average role player and the type of guy that's contributes on a good college football team like Penn State, I guess you call it great, but you're not really going to play in the NFL. You're probably making $300,000, $400,000 at minimum. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, I got to go get a job for $55,000. And they have no understanding. It's like, oh, where's my job where I'm making $40K a month again? And it's like, no. That's not a real world thing. So I think that's what's hard too, is these guys are they're in a bubble basically, and they don't understand. They're not educated on what the real world really is, how you have to take care of your money. And I've already seen it definitely to take a toll on people in a bad way, man.
Yeah, that's brutal. I mean, I think that, and what's crazy is that's one variable that money brings, right? One of it is like literally the financial aspect, which is like, how good are you at realizing that money is a tool in the end to achieve the things that you want to do? And then that there's certain things like assets and liabilities, and assets are the things that generally make you money, and liabilities are the things that literally suck money out of you. Car payments are a perfect example of liability. So that's one thing. You know, obviously pay your taxes and all that stuff. Like, that's very important. Don't go to jail for not paying your taxes. It's the Uncle Sam's going to come get it. So that's one. But then the other aspect too is the psychological aspect of becoming wealthy so quickly too. You know, like one of the, and I would love to pick your brain on this, because I know we may have DM'd about this. I know Christian Hackenberg, like I had a chance to speak to him briefly a while ago, but that was like one of the things that I brought up with him was the psychological aspect of having been in high school, achieving all those goals. And the traditional step would have been, I go to an awesome college as a 4-5 star. I get to go through my playing career. And then with the goal of finally making it to the NFL and to just become a professional. And then with that comes obviously the monetary reward. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, by the way, that thing that you were, you know, potentially working towards, guess what? You get it now. Okay. Mm-hmm. What does that do to a player? Is that having an impact at all this season with players, do you think, on the field?
Yeah, I think it creates so much just satisfaction, and I'm fine where I'm at. I feel like I already made it. The whole idea was, you didn't make it when you got to college. It was very cool. It was a great experience, but you still didn't have any money. Some guys are barely sending home a couple hundred dollars a month to their family, but there was no taking care of your family in college up until 2022 at the earliest, 2023. So I think complacency absolutely is a real thing. You got a full belly. Say, oh, I feel good. I ate today. I'm good. I'm going to relax. Because that's naturally what we do as humans. If you feel like you have made it, which how many humans really touch $1 million in their bank account at one time? A very tiny percentage. So, yeah, they feel like they've already made it. And so I'll tell you an interesting aspect, too, that has been added to this. Because the NCAA has implemented certain caps where, as far as an athletic department, it's just started on July 1st that you can now directly pay your players money. That was not a thing. It was all had to be outside money, and that's why these universities were basically partnering up with NIL collectives. They were working together and saying, hey, we're going to get you guys the donors. We're going to funnel the money from the donors through the NIL collectives, then to the players. And basically the idea was, hey, the players got to go do an appearance. They got to go to a charity. They got to do a social media post, something like that. So that was fine, and that's why it was a little bit easier to manage. So now starts July 1st, and you can only pay players, you know, in total, not just college football, but let's say Penn State Athletics has a budget of about $20 million, and you can disperse that however you'd like, and mainly the splits are like 75% football, you know, like 10% basketball, and then you kind of trickle out a little bit more.
Real quick there, so the 75% of football, does the football department then decide who gets what, or is it an even split across all the players?
Yeah, you get to decide where it goes. And so, okay. Yeah.
Drew can get more than Katron, and Katron can get more than, you know, Nick.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. 100%. And yeah, so if you're a lower-level guy, if you're a freshman, and you're a three-star, four-star freshman, you're not making that much right now. I mean, not that much. You're still making more than the average American, probably by double at least. So it's not anything little. But you still have that outside money, and you still have those donors. So you get around it, because the whole idea was, hey, now we're going to kind of put a cap on this thing. And maybe when this idea first came about, it was like all these guys that are making $5 million a year. You hear Carson Beck is making this ridiculous amount of money at Miami. It's like, oh, we're going to put a cap on this starting July 1st. And maybe this will level it out. And maybe the max guys will make is like $500,000. And we can live with that. Well, of course, that never works. And the NCAA actually has no backbone to stand on anything at the moment. So, of course, teams are going to find a workaround. Now, there still is, you know, teams still want to follow that rule to a degree. So what you have now is you have this cap that was coming. So specifically how it affected this season was you lead up and it's May, it's June. And so you say, hey, starting July 1st, 2025 until, you know, June 30th, whatever, of 2026, we have that $20 million cap. Well, why don't we pay everybody as much as we can right now before July 1st, 2025? So what you've had is almost all college football players were completely front-loaded to start this year. They got all their money. Not only did you get full off the fact that you're making millions of dollars, you got full because that money is already in your bank account before the start of the season. So that's what we had a ton of front-loading this year. So wow. Drew Aller, who made $3.2 million, I would venture to say at least 75% of that was in his bank account before July 1st even happened.
Wow.
Pretty easy to get complacent. I mean, how would the majority of people perform if you just get paid all your money for your job up front? If you just get, you know, if you just get advanced.
It's much harder.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like I'm the same way. If I do like a brand deal and they pay me up front, it's like, oh, you still have 10 more posts over the next 2 months. Those posts get a lot harder to make.
Post number 9 is going to be really shitty.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. I'm going to be like, I'll just phone this in. Like, our money's already in my bank account. So, dang, you know, dude. Yeah, that is the biggest thing that specifically this year. And so it won't affect really from here on out because now you have a year-by-year cap. And like I said, you still have the situation that you can go to these outside donors and say, hey, you know, and we can get more. We're going to get into more detail about all the NIL inner workings. But you can kind of say, hey, can you do a deal with them and pay them $500,000 just, you know, do a couple social media posts or whatever. And so you can still have that. But these schools are trying to kind of respect the rules set by the NCAA and not just fully disrespect them. So, like I said, people are trying to stay within that cap, and that's where all this front-loaded money came from. So I don't think it's 100% to blame for why we have all this, like, variety and, like, people that we thought were going to be so good in college football this year, or teams that we thought were going to be so good aren't. But I think it could be a big reason why. Like I said, you get paid all that money up front before the season starts. It becomes really easy to say, I don't think I'm going to go watch film, because I'm not hungry to get to the league really anymore, mm-hmm. because my family's already taken care of. I got an AP on right now. My car. I can't tell you how many times I'm driving around downtown State College and I'm like, yo, whose car is that? What the heck? Well, what car even is that? I'm not a big car guy. I'm like, I don't even know what car that is. And it's like, and then, you know, I just see one of the football players get out of it. I'm like, dude, that has to be at least $80,000, $90,000, probably $100,000 car. No question. And damn, so that, man. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
It would be very hard for me to feel. And again, like, and I know you just said this, like, I want to make sure I'm very clear here. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm obviously a huge Penn State fan, but I don't think, I'm not saying that Drew's performance, the offensive line's performance, you know, the Knicks' performance, whatever, I'm not saying it's directly tied to the money. I know, like, I'm not a football player, and just watching football, the reason why I love watching it is because I'm watching unbelievably talented human beings doing unbelievably hard things. That's why I love seeing it. So it's obvious that all of these guys have all the talent in the world to execute. But I think the psychological aspect, like, it without a doubt, college football players, especially the ones that are getting outsized money and the ones that have outsized expectations, are going through a psychological warfare. That's what it feels like to me. And this is like the variable that I don't see being discussed enough this year. Like, you know, like a lot of people are talking about, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, here goes James Franklin again, losing the game. Oh, here, you know, Clemson or Dabo. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Dabo or Clemson. Let's set that aside. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, like, whatever. They're not performing well. But to say that these players aren't going through psychological warfare this year is, I think, it's very incorrect because of every single variable you just went through. And that has to have some form of impact. I think I guess my overarching question is for this next one is, like, what if you were to try to come up with, like, a percentage drive for the average college football player, okay? How much of it is I'm trying to get to the league to make money? How much of it is money? And how much of it is I love the game so much? I love what I do so much. I have so much passion for what I'm doing that I don't care if I'm getting paid $100 million a year. Like, Tom Brady is the perfect example of this, right? This motherfucker, he gave up money because he wanted to be part of a legacy. That's how he came across to me. What is the certification? Like, if we were to say, is the top 20%, do they think about legacy, and the bottom 80% don't think about legacy? Like, hey, if you were to think about that concept, help me understand that better.
Oh, dude, I'd say it's like 90-10. And that might be even giving too much, that 10% actually care about legacy and 90% care about the money. I think this is interesting to talk about from a psychology standpoint, right? Because how we intrinsically value things is, let's talk about football. The intrinsic values is I love the game. I want to play it to be great. That type of thing that love that you had for it when you were 8, 9, 10 years old. Now, the extrinsic values of the money, the fame, the social media following, that is what is now being thrown at college football players, that you did not get those extrinsic values until you were in the NFL. And so now, and naturally, when those extrinsic values go up and the fame and the money gets thrown at you, the intrinsic value starts to go down. But that's just like human nature. Because it's just easier. Those are the easier things to fall to. That is the shiny object, the money, the fame. It's just easy. The shiny car, all that type of stuff. And so I think it was already not a problem, but before NIL, like, it didn't really matter. Because, like I said, guys didn't make any money. So you couldn't tell the difference between who intrinsically valued football and who extrinsically valued what they gained from football. And so there was no way, because you weren't really getting anything. Yeah, you could maybe have a following outside of, like, Johnny Manziel just doing completely illegal stuff and going to do, like, cocaine and
nuts.
Yeah, just going to strip clubs and going to Vegas at 18 and sign, you know. So outside of that, you couldn't tell the difference. But now it is so clear. And I've kind of talked about this, but I've never actually talked about the fact of how you couldn't tell the difference. And now you can, because and it's not to say just that someone's having a bad year. That just means that they're just, you know, selfish and all they care about is the money and the fame. I don't want to put everybody into that box. With it happening at kind of a high clip now, I think that's something that you have to point to. I mean, this is the variable that has been changed, that people are getting paid significantly higher amounts of money. And that's kind of where we're at now. It looks like people, like I said, you got a full belly. Well, I'm gonna rest on my laurels and chill out.
Yeah. How common is that conversation at Penn State, would you say? Like, if you're like talking to people like on campus, just the people that you're talking to, is that a thing that comes across like, holy shit, like there could be some complacency starting to creep into the program?
Yeah, I know that's a conversation I've heard a bunch of. And I honestly think probably it might be one of the biggest topics in terms of whenever now a team, and like I said, now it's almost easier. If something goes wrong, it's almost like NIL can be the scapegoat. It can be the I'm going to point to that's why it went wrong. So it's almost easier for fans and people on the outside to just point to it and be like, oh, NIL, you're getting paid now, that's why everybody's bad. So like I said, it's hard to put everybody into that box, but I would say that's actually probably the most popular, just kind of, like I said, thing to point to for why something went wrong, why something went the opposite way than you thought it was going to go. It was because, oh, these guys are getting paid. They're just hanging out now. And you see it too. Like, I see it on social media. I used to hear it when I went to class at Penn State, because tuition, it's going up every single year. And now, you know, people hear that Drew Aller's making the star quarterback that's making $3 million. And it's like, oh, am I, you know, the whole like statement, oh, I'm paying for them or the athletic team, whatever. We have new athletic facilities that like all the Penn State athletes get to use. And the whole joke is like, oh, I'm paying for that. My tuition's paying for that. Or teachers, they get some funding cut. And it's like, oh, you know, athletics is getting all this new money. And the president of Penn State is getting, you know, this $500,000 raise and all this type of stuff. And it's like, oh, we're just getting taxed more. We're getting more money put on us. We have this new fee. What is this? What is the excellence fee? And like, that's the hardest thing with all these fans. Like, I heard this from a couple people. It's third quarter in Beaver Stadium against Oregon. You're down 17-3. It is a piss poor performance. And James Franklin comes on the scoreboard, obviously pre-recorded, but comes on the Jumbotron asking for NIL money. Hey. And I mean, I heard it was met with just a fury of boos. That is the problem, is that we're constantly, like, I've had a couple people, like, there's still emails being sent out this week from Penn State Athletics of like, hey, make sure you check out the ability to get your name written on a brick outside of Beaver Stadium. All you got to do is donate $5,000 to this fund. And it's like, dude, there is clear donor fatigue. And I think that is the biggest problem that we have right now. You're seeing the talks of private equity start to enter college athletics. And that's the real thing, because they realize it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable to pay a roster $30 million a year. And it's pretty much comprised of donors. They can only do that for so long. And that's partially what was a big positive of getting the revenue sharing situation kind of figured out. So basically, let's just say, once again, Penn State Athletics, it's like around 100, and maybe they brought in like 140 million, something like that. That was the number that they brought in last year. 20% is what is supposed to be shared now with the athletes. That's about the number they decided on. It still didn't seem even, because 20% of 140 is not $20 million, but that's what they gave them. Yeah. So, you know, that's the other problem now, is these athletic programs, as much as you can say they have a ton of money, they also don't, because they were wired every single year to spend everything, because they knew that they were going to get that money replenished the next year. Well, the problem is they were set up to spend, all right, let's spend $135 million. All right, we're going to spend $137 million this year. And now all of a sudden, yeah, we're going to bring in $140 million again, but now I got to give out $20 million. So, all right, shoot, now we got to cut here. I've heard around Penn State, I mean, there's tiny little cuts being made all over the place. People getting fired. Hey, we got to take 15 grand out here. We got to take 40 grand here. And so that's what you're dealing with now, is these athletic departments, to a degree, are kind of poor. And once again, I know it sounds redundant when it's something makes over $100 million to call it poor in any way, shape, or form.
Relative. I mean, it is relatively poor.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, that there's so many battles of this, the redistribution of where all this money is going. It truly is like the biggest shit show that there's ever been. And look, at the end of the day, the NCAA is the only people to blame, because they 100%. Wanted to keep this the way it was for as long as possible. They are the grimiest organization in the world. Keep nonprofit status. I mean, it's ridiculous what they were doing. And it wasn't even like... They didn't
exploiting athletes to enrich their pockets.
Absolutely. Literally. Yeah. Dude, up until about 10 years ago, it was illegal for you to get cream cheese and a bagel. You could get one or the other, but once you put the cream cheese on the bagel, that was considered like a real snack, and it was like, boom, that's a violation.
Crazy.
It's like, what are you, seriously, that's what it was like. So it is, it's pretty messed up. Where we are at right now. Something that is cool is the back pay that's going on. I'm a part of that, and I think I'm expected. I'm very open about all this. I think everybody's kind of paid the same, as far as it's really just basketball players and football players from 2016 until 2023. And if you fall in that line, it depends how many years you were in that gap right there. But if you were all 4 or 5 years in that gap, you're getting about $150,000 in back pay. Now, the problem is, who the hell knows when that's going to come? They have about 10 years, I think, to pay it out. And on top of that, they basically, all the women now are suing with that and saying, hey, we want way more than what we're supposed to be getting. And now they're back in court. And, you know, so who knows if that's ever actually going to, that's probably never going to hit my bank account, but, you know,
I'm sure it will.
It will eventually, but hopefully I'm rich enough where it's kind of whatever at that point. Oh, that's never, that amount of money's never whatever, but that's, it'll probably be years down the road, would be my guess. I mean, they definitely legally have to pay it out. But there's so many different legalities and little things going on behind the scenes in the world of college athletics. It is truly a mess, and everybody's head is spinning.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I think what it sounds like to me, it's like we've had a decades-long buildup of just a broken cartel system, and the dams have finally broken. And then we've had decades of unwinding starting to happen in a sort of place where everybody now realizes that NCAA doesn't have any authority. And then now that you have all these organizations and private, you know, VCs coming in and all that stuff, it's just it's a Wild Wild West scenario. And then it's just, and now the players have maximum leverage. So they went from having zero leverage to maximum leverage. And then when either party has maximum leverage, the whole thing is completely unstable. The only reason why the NCAA was able to have the system that it did for as long as they did is because it seemed like everybody was kind of on the same page, and it was so lucrative that they were able to tamper everybody down. But eventually the dam broke, and it created an entirely different problem where now, you know, like what's stopping, let's say, Underwood, right? Michigan's quarterback, from, could he technically transfer to Ohio State next year if they give him a bigger bag? Why can't he do that, right? Is that a possibility? Like, let's say, hypothetically, could that happen? If Ohio State says, here's $20 million, you know, could that happen? Probably.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we're seeing people even challenge the outlines that have been set for, you know, by the NCAA. Like, there's people that are coming out, and there was this guy that transferred from Wisconsin down to, I think it was like Florida State, but he transferred out of Wisconsin, and he didn't even enter the transfer portal. He said, no, I don't need to enter the transfer portal. Yes. He was basically like, that's a fake concept. He's like, that's not a real concept. I'm just going to go play down at, well, I forget whatever school it was. It was something down south. He's like, I'm just going to go. Like, what are you going to do? And guess what? He's playing down at that school down south. Like, there's if people have realized that the NCAA now in they're powerless. They have zero power. So something else. I talked about all these new rules that went into effect July 1st, where these universities can now directly pay players. And there's already a million things that are wrong with that to a degree, because now we're entering into a world of, are they employees? Are you taxed on your clothes? Are you taxed on your scholarship? Are guys even going to be going to school and getting their education in a couple of years, which I think would be devastating if that goes away? We
are
all know
1099s right now. Players are technically 1099s, or are they, like, they're not employees of the university? They're just being paid. They're just literally getting 1099, and then they have to self-report basically to the
correct.
Government. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So it's yeah. So I mean that's where they're at right now. And so they're getting a bunch of money from different places. And so what you have is you had that $20 million cap that like I said, a bunch was paid out beforehand, but that's what you're dealing with. And so now these schools that have you hear that whoever Georgia has a $40 million roster. Well, you say, how do they do that if there's a $20 million cap? Well, what they do is they go out and then, like I said earlier, they talk to these different donors and say, hey, this donor's got this big business. We got, for example, right here, West Shore Home Field, the sponsor, sorry. Friend of the show. They do a ton. There we go. Big time sponsor of the show. And they own the field rights to Beaver Stadium. It is West Shore Home Field at Beaver Stadium. Well, BJ Wurzen and West Shore Home, they do a ton of NIL deals with our players and they pay them a lot of money. So now it has to be submitted, though, to this group. It's called NIL Go. And so they came out this on July 1st and they said to all these different programs, hey, you can pay your players whatever you want under that $20 million cap. If you want to give 10 of that to your star quarterback, go for it. Be my guest. But if you want to start to these athletes to get any type of deals outside of that cap money, it needs to be submitted to NIL Go. So if Drew Aller wants a deal with West Shore Home that is worth $150,000, it needs to be submitted to NIL Go. And we're going to look at this and we're going to say, okay, he has to do 10 appearances for $150,000. Does NIL Go feel that this is adequate? Is this an actual fair amount? Because I think what they didn't want was, you know, like I said, a local donor has this big business and they say, yeah, I'll give you $1 million for one social media post. Well, obviously that is not real. And the fair value is not.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, sorry, absolutely.
I may have missed this. Who oversees NIL Go?
So right now it's technically Deloitte. It is actually, the NCAA basically partnered up with Deloitte and Deloitte is supposed to be the one that's like,
firm.
Yes, that is overseeing all these deals. Now, it was very much expected. Very quickly, you have 136 FBS programs. You have all these different. I mean, think how many players are in at each school. Every player has multiple NIL deals. So you would guess very quickly that NIL Go portal is what they call it, where you submit those deals, gets backed up. Within a couple weeks, you're already hearing things about. Yeah, I submitted this I and it's real ones. Hey, I had an appearance that I wanted to do for $10,000. I submitted it to NIL Go. My appearance was in 3 weeks from now. Didn't hear anything back. Got nothing back from NIL Go within 3 weeks. And the event came, went, and I didn't get to go and I didn't get the money because NIL Go never approved it. So
and
now
players are dealing with that while they're practicing, while they're preparing for games, while they're playing games, while they're traveling for away games, right?
Absolutely. And worrying about, hey, I got to get this post up. And that's the hard part about NIL is that now you have all these outside distractions where if you're an NFL player, you just get your check because you're playing the game and that's the check that you get paid for playing in that game that week. But it's very different when you are getting paid because I need to go do this appearance on Monday or I need to make sure this social media post is filmed and up and what do I need to say? And I got to worry about X, Y. And it sounds stupid. And I'm sure everybody would love that life of, oh, I got to make a social media post for $50,000. Oh, that really sucks. But we're talking about these little distractions and why people aren't performing at the highest level. That's why, to a degree. So now what we are seeing, and it was very much expected that this was going to happen, people and a lot of these universities are now saying, hey, we're not even going to submit to NIL Go because you are not getting back to us in a timely manner. I'm not going to respect the fact that we need to submit anything because you're screwing over our players. So we're just going to go and do it anyways. And I dare you to punish us. As we have seen, the NCAA cannot do anything right now. They're getting their asses whooped in court. Michigan showed them the middle finger with their whole sign stealing scandal. They did nothing to Michigan. I mean, they gave them a tiny little slap on the wrist for basically cheating their way to a national championship. Yeah. We're in a very, very weird place right now in college athletics, especially college football.
So, and then imagine what it's like from the coach's perspective on top of that, right? So now, like, the player perspective is a total hot mess. It's almost like I truly feel bad, even though, like, these guys, like we said, like, you know, love Drew Aller. He's the man. I really, it does seem like he's trying his best, but I know he's getting a check. He's getting a giant check. And fans of the program, you're going to get heat coming your way, and it's deserved because you are now a professional athlete, You're getting paid to put a product on the TV that you directly get paid from based on your performance. So by default, you are going to whatever criticism you get is going to be fair. But on top of that, they're almost like, when they're coming up through high school to go to college, do they really, like when Drew Aller was a true freshman at Penn State, did he think he was going to have this his senior year? Probably not, right? Like this level of complexity, this kind of psychological warfare. So from their perspective, I really feel like, yes, are they getting a ton of money? And if they're smart about it, are they going to have potentially generational wealth if they're really smart about where they put their money? Absolutely. But they better know how to fucking where to put their money, number one. But number two, like, it's not, it's almost like not their fault, especially if like you're talking about these juniors and seniors and redshirt seniors that are now being thrown this unbelievably complex situation on top of them trying to hit these, like, let's say sometimes, what's the right word? Like unfair expectations. In the case of Penn State, I would say they're more fair because everybody came back. Everybody came back with a, you know, with a reason. You got James Franklin out there trying to hype up the team and all that stuff. And I'm using Penn State just as an example, not to say they're the only case or potentially they're even a case. But now think about it from Franklin's perspective. All of a sudden, he's not just football coach anymore. He's almost like a psychologist. He's almost like a therapist. Now he has to be a sort of financial manager. Now he has to manage a different kind of expectation from what used to be amateur athletes that are now professional athletes. And how professional athletes operate is very different than amateur athletes, because professional athletes now, like, there's going to be some people. How many players on the team make more than their coaches now?
Ooh, a lot. Yeah. Not their head coach.
Dynamic.
Yeah, but position coaches, yeah. I would say there's at least
Drew's making probably more than freaking what's his than our defensive coordinator.
Yeah, than Jim Knowles. Yeah, exactly. And he's making more than Kodo Nicky and Jim Knowles. And Jim Knowles is the highest paid defensive coordinator ever. So I mean, you think every, and that's the different dynamic, you know, in the NFL. Damn. It was understood that players made more than even the head coach, and that's just kind of known, and that's how it is. Wasn't even ever close to a thing in college football. Now, no one on the team makes more than James Franklin, but still, I mean, it's. It is a truly a odd situation, and I think it's everybody trying to figure out as we go, and it's creating quite the shit show, and you're starting to see the mental fortitude of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids be tested, and we're seeing the problems of giving them this much money, this much expectations. You're challenging, like I said, there. Clearly some guys don't have it mentally, and so it not only are they getting the pressure of being the savior of the program, but now we put millions of dollars into you. You better perform or you are going to be hated here times 10.
And you know what's crazy too? Like if you think about like the job that Oregon did, because they're fighting through the same exact variables. They have from my understanding, they have a bigger pie to work with from a money perspective. Like the disparity that they're going to have is going to be even bigger than Penn State's. And then they're able to come into Penn State, come into the wideout, unbelievably hostile environment. And they were able to execute with a younger roster versus Penn State too. So it's like, and I want to be very clear here. Like this is not a one size fits all dynamics. Clearly some programs have figured out how to navigate through this better than others. And so like, I wonder, do you think there's going to be a, like, I almost feel like there's going to be a giant amount of change at the head coach positions for the next 3 to 5 years. And honestly, now I know why Bill Belichick went to college. Because the Bill Belichick mindset is much closer to the current college landscape than it's ever been. Because you're now dealing with professionals. You're now dealing with people that are getting paid money, that have a different set of expectations and are working with different variables in their private lives, versus what used to be there, which is like your, you know, your Franklins and your Dabos and what, even your Lannings and everybody, right? Like your Sabins back in the day. There's a reason why Saban left, is because he saw this. He's like, fuck that. And that's why he's not a coach anymore, obviously, right? It's like, he's not going to deal with that bullshit because he coaches a certain way. He's more of like a mentor of kids to turn them into men. That's the way I view somebody like Saban. But then now you throw this like you said, this external variable that comes in that just, it's going to get in the way of that message coming across. And he's probably like, yeah, I'm not gonna deal with that bullshit. Let somebody else figure it out. And then we'll see if you know, Alabama's new coach, the guy who used to be at Washington. I keep blanking on these names.
Kalen DeBoer.
Kalen DeBoer. we'll see. He might be better fit to coach. You know, I mean, I was giving Alabama a ton of shit at the beginning of the year, but I mean, they went into Georgia and beat him again. Different coach, and you know, they beat Georgia. They play Vanderbilt, which I love the confidence from the Vanderbilt quarterbacks talking shit to Alabama. If we put like, we're Vanderbilt, we're gonna beat you, dude. If Vanderbilt talks that much shit and they beat Alabama, just make them national champions. Just give them the trophy.
I love it. I know. Yeah, Diego Pavia. Yeah, he's awesome. No, it's very cool. No, I think you're right. And no, it is a completely different landscape now. A big variable is now teams are adding GMs. You have GMs. And so there's certain people like Nick Saban, probably on top of not wanting to deal with paying players millions of dollars, he didn't want a GM. You think Nick Saban wanted a GM and someone that was technically higher up than him, because the GM's always higher up than the head coach. Think he wanted a GM telling him what to do? Absolutely not. So, and certain teams haven't adapted. Like James Franklin, he kind of snuck in like his player personnel guy as like his GM, but it's not a real GM role. It's not a traditional GM role where, like I said, Andrew Luck is the GM of Stanford, and he'll
just do whatever James wants him to do.
Exactly. So he will do exactly. He will do whatever the head coach says. It's not a true. So you got head coaches managing that of, hey, do I really want to bring in someone that is going to be my boss? I mean, if you are the boss, now obviously you have the athletic director and you have the president of the university, but you're the boss of the football program. You want to add a boss? Do you want to say yes to someone else? Me? Absolutely not. So that's why you're seeing some head coaches try to fight it and maybe work their way around it. But it simply is just completely just changing how everything is viewed. But it's also hard. If I don't bring in that GM, do I have, as a head coach now, I have to be the head coach and the GM. I have to figure out, or at least assign someone to figure out, okay, how are we going to handle this budget? Who's going to talk to the agents? That's a whole other thing that we haven't gotten into yet. The people representing these kids, as far as an absolute joke, dude. An absolute joke. You got
scum of the earth, I'm sure.
Oh, you got uncles, you got dads, you got cousins, you have quarterback coaches, you got the trainers saying, oh yeah, this is my guy. And then not only are they scum of the earth, but of course they are, and they're asking for 20% of what this kid is making. Damn. It's like, are you kidding me? And so now you're dealing, and I've heard this from multiple different colleges and teams of, we are dealing with these incompetent, you know, managers, representation, whatever you want to call them, for these high school kids. And it's like, how do we deal with this? Like, how do we deal with this guy that doesn't know what the hell he's talking about? And he's demanding three times more than this kid's worth. And yeah, we want him. And we understand that this is not this kid's fault and that he's in a bad situation and that it's his, you know, dumb uncle that's trying to just squeeze money out of us. And we really want this kid. He's a good kid, but we got to drop him. We can't keep recruiting him because he's in an awful situation and his representation is just absolutely ridiculous.
Crazy, dude. I mean, I intuitively thought, and you know, all the videos that I've watched, and you know, watching, I know you mostly stick to the X's and O's, and I know like your chats and stuff, like your post games and your pre games are a little bit more free flowing, and you answer questions. But I mean, like the value you bring from all the different perspectives is great. But it's like actually having a back and forth conversation with somebody so close to what's happening. It's just, to me, it feels like there's going to be so much change in the next 3 to 5 years. It can't stay the same. Like there's going to be a flight of head coaches that are going to be like, I'm not going to deal with this. There's going to be a flight of firings because now the expectations from the program and from the donors and from where the money's coming from is going to be completely different. It's going to be much closer to a professional environment than an amateur environment. So that's going to be crazy. We're going to see a brand new set of players that are going to come through from the high school circuit to the college circuit with a completely different set of expectations. We're going to have the existing players that were in the transitionary period who are now redshirt juniors and seniors that are going to have to survive this somehow. You know, going into this world with one expectation and leaving it with a completely different expectation, how's that going to impact their movement to the NFL? Then as all this stuff is going on, how's that hurting development? How's that hurting of the players? What is that going to do to the NFL, right? Like, what kind of crop of players are they going to get in? What kind of expectations? What kind of psychology? Like, how many damaged, like the confidence aspect of it, right? Like, if I'm thinking about certain players that they're having really tough seasons and their confidence is shot, but they're getting all this money and they're still going to get drafted. Like, what's going to happen to their ability to like have confidence in themselves to be true professionals and play at the NFL? It's just like, to me, the sport is going to change so much. And so, like, I'm going to ask you to put your prediction hat on, okay? And I'm going to ask you specifically about Penn State football. Where do you see the program in the next 5 years? And what do you think they have to do today, right now, to win a national championship this year? Like what was their goal? If you were, and I know this is a gigantic question, take as much time as you need. What do you think are the things that need to happen?
Yeah, well, I'll start out with this year. I think, you have to regain the locker room. It's clear that to a degree, the locker room is lost. I think the fan base with James Franklin is lost. And I think you lose a little bit of locker room within that when you do that. It's so hard to say, and especially because I'm not truly in the locker room anymore. But it feels like there needs to be.
If you don't feel comfortable answering,
no, dude, I'm open. Yeah. It feels like there needs to be a fire lit under a lot of these guys' asses. If I'm gonna be honest, as much as you hear James Franklin say that Nick Singleton and Drew Aller are struggling, and it seems like they're kind of questioning themselves and they're not fully confident. Well, maybe to a degree. We're getting a little too much of, especially with these guys making money and all this stuff. Hey, it's okay. You know, you got to get right. You're gonna do better. Good. You know, you're doing good. Come on, you got this. Maybe you need. Hey, you fucking suck right now. You need to pick this shit up at this moment, or else we are screwed. You need to understand how big this moment really is. If we lose this game, if we go to Columbus in a couple weeks and we lose that game, we might not make the playoffs. We're not going to be able to have any type of funding that we had for this year because we went to bat saying this is going to be the year, and it wasn't.
And how are you going to lose your fucking NIL for next year?
Exactly. I think to a degree, like, there needs to be. Hey, we're not going to baby this situation. We're going to have adult conversations, and not only that. Like, I'm not saying like James Franklin, but other coach, like, I could lose my job. Like, this is real fucking life. I might have to relocate my family, my three kids that go to school here in State College that have friends. I got to tell my wife to pack up the house. That's all real life shit right there. Yeah. So I think sometimes you got to have those type of conversations. I think that might be the type of conversation, type of wake up that Penn State needs, because it seems like we might have been living in a fairy tale of, hey, it's great. We're going to be the greatest team ever, and we brought everybody back, and we got these great coordinators, and Drew Aller is going to be the greatest quarterback in college football. The offensive line is going to be able to dominate the run game. And it's just kind of like we assumed all this stuff, and it seems like they assumed it too. And they didn't put the work in to actually achieve what we thought was going to happen. And that's what it feels like. So I think there needs to be some real heart-to-hearts. I think there is clearly a lack of leadership from the top down at the moment. And so that starts with Coach Franklin. But you need that from the offensive coordinator. You need that from players, specifically on the offense. Nobody's having fun playing. If anybody out there that's listening, if you watch Penn State football play offense, no one is playing inspired. No one is having fun. You can just tell that no one believes in the offense. You need fire. And it starts with Drew Aller on the offense. It starts with your quarterback. If you do not believe in your quarterback, you don't believe in the offense, because that is the motor that makes this thing go. So... Yeah. I think that's hard. You've got to get fire out of Drew. When I played with Sean Clifford, it was fire. Oh, as much as people could say whatever the hell they want about Sean Clifford, who's in the NFL now over with the Bengals, he was a fiery dude. He was going to let the emotions be felt, and it made me want to go to bat for Sean. It made me want to put my life on the line for Sean. I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but the way that Drew has conducted himself, it's hard to feel that same way about Drew, if you want me to be honest. I mean, it's just that simple. Yeah. So that's where I'm at for this season. You need to have some tough conversations, and it might not be everything's going to be all right, good job, keep trying, sweetheart. It might need to be, let's have some real adult conversations here. As far as long term, it's so hard to predict, especially with kind of where.
I suppose we've got to see what happens this year to figure it out, huh? Because it just feels like such a crazy fork in the road moment.
It does feel that way. I mean, obviously you got the people right now, and it is kind of, you do put it in perspective. It's crazy to a degree that it's 3-1. We lost the number 2 team in the nation, and people are saying absolutely fire James Franklin. I'm not on that boat yet at all, because you got to be careful too.
If he's done fired, so much for the program, man, he really
he's from the depths. We've taken it from the depths. Yeah. But then it's hard, because when you say, yeah, it still hasn't, it's been since 2016 since he's won a big game, and you say, I know, it's so hard. You want to be careful of not being one of these other programs that was winning 8-9 games.
Yeah.
And obviously, especially it's been winning 10 games for the past couple of years or even more.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you fire your guy. And like you said, Nebraska, and next thing you know, it's 6 wins, it's 5 wins, it's 4 wins. And it's like, ah, damn, we actually had it pretty good. It's like I left this really good girl for this supermodel that I thought was going to be hot, but turns out she sucks and she's going out and partying with her friends and I hate my life. And you don't want to be in that.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to be in that situation if you are Penn State. So you got to be very careful. And I also don't think Penn State will fire James Franklin. I think he will be here really however long he wants because of what he's done and just kind of how it is. So I don't see that happening either. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting just from, like I said, we're talking to NIL a lot. It's going to be interesting to see how Penn State navigates that. How does the world of not even college athletics, but just like college in general, like Penn State is shutting down all these branch campuses. You got Neely Bendapudi, the president, getting these huge raises while my fiance's mom is a professor here. And they're cutting all different types of funding here, there. And it's like, so you just got a raise that almost doubled your salary. But we're cutting this person. We're cutting my friend that works her butt off here. We're cutting this other professor. Like, that is what, I don't know. Like, we're just going to keep, I mean, we've all seen it. Everything's going to keep, I don't know. It's hard, man. It's hard where we're at. It's hard to guess where it's going to go. But it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And I think that's the simple truth.
I think, like, you know, can you hear my dogs downstairs?
Yeah.
They're cooked, dude. They're like, fire Franklin. No.
Yeah, they're with the program.
That's so funny. That's funny. Actually, one of the things. Oh my God, these dogs. One second, Landon. I'm sorry.
Good, you
guys. Can. Hey. Sorry. Shout out to Sean Clifford, by the way. He follows me on X, and I follow him back. So
Sean's a good dude, man. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I love the style that he plays, man. Like, I'm so glad that he's finding success in the NFL. Like, I know he used to get so much shit for, like, being the starting QB for so many fans, but, like, everyone secretly loved him. Even if they're like, oh, you know, he doesn't have the talent, you know, his arm sucks, put in Drew's so much, has for some. But, like, the one thing that was obvious about Sean is, like, he cared so much. Same thing about Trace. Like, those guys care, and like the leadership from those guys is really what stood out. And I'm not saying Drew doesn't have that or can't get that, but like it's very obvious when you see a team that plays for that's playing from as a fan. It becomes very obvious when you know you have a leadership on the field versus when you don't, and across all levels, right? When you don't, you have clearly talented athletic individuals that are not executing the way you thought they would. And when you do have leadership, these guys seem to really put their talent to work, and they're actually executing on what they're supposed to be doing. That's as a layman football person, that's how it comes across to me on the TV, right? So I think maybe one of those things that maybe I'll leave you with this, Landon, because I know I've had you over an hour here. Are you okay on time for one?
Yeah, I'm so good. Actually, I'm good right now. I do have I got my engagement party tonight. Actually, so
dude, congratulations! That's
thank
awesome,
you, man. I'm very excited. I'm very excited. But yeah, no, you got me for as long as you need me, though.
Okay. I'm gonna ask you one more. I'm gonna let you go. I know you gotta get ready. So, one of the things I've been thinking through here, and you know, I listened to Josh Pate, by the way, another person that
shout out Pate, good friend of yourself.
I love that guy so much. He just can't. Okay. I'm never his ability to just talk is nuts. Oh. He just talks. You know?
And he is one of the one of the more talented just communicators I've ever seen, and to tell a story and to capture an audience. And what's so important, this isn't a knock on him at all. And he would admit, like, it's not like he dives into the X's and O's. But he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to at all, because he has an unbelievable talent to communicate. And every single time, I know, not to go off topic, but like every single time he comes out with a take, I'm like, damn, that's banger. A good take. That's a I'm banger. Like, that's a banger take. I'm like, holy crap, that's a great way to think about it every single time. Sorry, continue on.
No, you're good. I just like I'm on a fanboy about because like Pate, like I view him. Like, I love his sports takes, but I really, like, you know, we're both content creators. Like, just the way he can sit in front of a camera and communicate ideas so succinctly, so clearly, that is, like, with so much, like, passion and also, like, charisma. I think that's one thing that separates him from everybody. If I'm, like, to decompose, why is Josh Pate so successful? Like, those are the variables that I go through. He's just a phenomenal orator. But let me get back to my question, because... Mike, I love talking, dude. I love talking about this stuff. Thank you so much for coming on, by the way. I'm like,
thank you for having me.
So much fun. You have no idea. What are the chances? Okay, this is what Josh Pate was talking about today. That one of the clips I saw that I was thinking about over the weekend. The moments where and I know this is common in sports, the moments that are the hardest and the darkest and the deepest and the ones where you feel like all hope is lost are the biggest chances for total transformations. What are the chances, and again, this is maybe the over-optimistic Penn State fan, like what are the chances that this is the actual moment the team had to go through with all this complexity, with all this adversity, with all this psychological warfare, with all the crazy stuff we've just talked through, not just the players, but the coaches and Franklin, right? That is like, okay, this has to be it. It has to be it. There is nothing else has lined up more perfectly from you. And I know Rojas just had an injury this week, which is a huge, huge blow. And, you know, prayers and thoughts go to him and his family. Like, you know, it's a huge loss for sure. But like, really think about everything you've built so far. And what is the likelihood that this team can actually embrace the moment that they're in and take it as a, okay, we can actually, like, this is true legacy now. This, we are the team that has the ability and the potential to take those years of decade plus of this rebuild of sorts that Penn State football has gone through, that we've kept trying to hit that ceiling and break through it. Like, we have what it takes. And we've survived all these moments. And this week is probably the lowest we'll ever be. This week fucking sucks. Not just as a Penn State fan, but I'm sure as a Penn State player, it fucking sucks. As a football coach, I'm sure it's the fucking worst, right? But this is how men are made. This is the fucking moment. This is where we rise from the ashes and we take what's ours. What are the chances that actually happens with the team? And what's required for that to happen? You know, like we talked about leadership, like what are the chances that actually happens?
Yeah, so like you said, I think it absolutely is harder for the coaches and the players. You and I can go off and watch, you know, another YouTuber we like, or go get, you know, be busy with our work. That is their work and that is their life.
100%.
So they live that. They're living it every single second. They are, you know, they have to embrace the suck. Now, I was on the team in 2021 when Penn State was the number four team in the nation. We go to number three, Iowa. We lose there. We thought, it's, hey, we still have it all in front of us. We can still beat Michigan and Ohio State, and we can still do this all. Lose to Iowa, lose to Illinois in 9 overtimes. You lose to Michigan, you lose to Ohio State, you lose to Michigan State, and all of a sudden you go to the you know, the fuck-off bowl, and you lose that to Arkansas, too. You cannot allow that to happen. There's a couple guys on the team that were a part of that team. You have to – this is the time where you stick together, when everybody out there is against you. Even the stuff that I say on my podcast, if any of the guys are watching that, they're saying, damn, Landon's against us, too. Man, that's mainly just because I'm a pissed off fan at this point in time. But everything is against them. And that is when you come together. That is, for example, you know, just put it into simpler terms too, like you think about, that is why fall camp is so important. That before the season starts, those 28, 30 days where you go through the suckiest moments ever. And it sucks for everybody. And you hurt and you ache. And every day is just another grind. But that's what gets you closer. And those moments with your brothers where not even necessarily on the field, where you go home after and you're saying, damn, man, that was hard. That was so hard, but we're going to continue to make it through. We're going to continue to grind. And that's kind of where you're at right now if you're Penn State. The boys right now, they're in the air as we speak on their way out to the West Coast. Probably a good time to have a 3-4-day trip and go out there and build some moments together and have those tough conversations and talk to each other in the locker room. And talk about how this is not acceptable, or this is the bar that we need to set for ourselves. This could be, like you said, are we finally hitting bedrock to where now we can go upward? I think that is the biggest question. Is this where the story completely takes a new turn and Penn State goes undefeated from here on out and beats Ohio State and they get a rematch with Oregon in the Big Ten championship, and who knows where they go from there? Very well could be. I think it's hard for a lot of Penn State fans to think that way right now, and because of where we've been. But like you said, there has to be that bedrock moment at some point. Is this it? I think only the players can answer that, and it's only the mindset that the players have. How strong is your mental fortitude to bounce back from this and not allow that social media and all that stuff to creep in that you're seeing online and say, no, forget it. I got me and my guys, and we're going to go out. And we're going to right the ship, and we're going to take Penn State on a different trajectory than they were going to be on.
Yeah, man. This is why I love sports so much. It's because of when these storylines form, like I think that's why sports is undefeated. Like honestly, like from the history, if you look at the history of humankind, sport has always been, and competition has always been at the bedrock of civilization and humanity, because it's the most raw, like it's the most raw representation and manifestation of overcoming difficult things, of doing hard things, you know, like that from my perspective. I will tell you, when I was growing up until the age of like 14, I was born in Spain and I grew up playing basketball. I was the tallest kid in my thing, the best one. Like, you know, I was an athlete growing up. We moved to the States, and then I was like 6 foot when I was like 12 years old. By the way, I've been 6 foot since 12. Like I just fucking like
just capped out there. Reason.
Just capped. I don't know what happened. My torso is like a torso of a 6'4" guy. Like your torso and I is the same, but my limbs are like fucking 5'6". You know, I'm like messy just walking around, that's but like crazy. Way less talented, you know, way, way less talented. But I remember, growing up, so I came to the States, and then I went from like being the best kid playing basketball, and when on all the circuits that I was in, and I came to the States, and then people started dunking on me. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Holy shit! I never overcame that. That was too hard of a thing for me to like psychologically get over, you know. But this is why I love watching sports so much, is because I see these kids that are turning into men overcoming all those challenges, the psychological, not just physical, but psychological challenges that come along with sports. You know, it's not just like, oh, it fucking sucks and I hurt. Of course, obviously. But then on top of that, you have, oh my God, like, am I meeting expectations? Am I letting people down? Am I letting my teammates down? Am I letting my coaches down? Now with fucking money, am I letting my family down? Am I letting my donors down? Am I letting, you know, like, am I letting the fans down? There's so many different variables that go in, but it's overcoming those things that makes sports so beautiful. And this is why I will never, ever stop being a Penn State fan, is because I know what Penn State has gone through. I've seen it. I went to the school. I saw it with my own two eyes. And I've seen the redemption arc that it's going through. And it's like, maybe it doesn't happen this year. Maybe it doesn't happen in 100 years. But I'm going to keep watching every fucking year because it may happen. It may happen. And that beautiful moment when it happens, I think is the thing that makes sports so beautiful. And honestly, the work you do covering the sport and Penn State football, and there's so many other Penn State content creators out there and journalists and stuff that I follow, but you specifically, I think you do such a great job because you make it easy for somebody like me to understand what the fuck is going on. You know, it's like it adds another layer and dimension at the surface level for me. Like at the surface level, it's like, okay, I think I know what's going on the field. And then I watch your stuff. I'm like, holy shit, that's like 1,000 times deeper than I thought was happening. I didn't know the guard was even allowed to do that. Okay. So I'm like, holy shit. So I really want to thank you for coming on, brother. Like this was one of the most enjoyable conversations I've had on my channel, dude. Like this is the stuff that I'm always hungry to talk about with people. And the fact that I have somebody actually knows what they're talking about is very helpful, not just for me, but I'm sure for the audience. So for the people out there, where can people find you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. You can find me at Landon Tangwall on really anything, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you get it. I am unbelievably active on Twitter, probably addicted, or X, I guess, as you call
you
it.
You and I both.
Yeah, we're on there too much. I see you all the time. I love it. We interact all the time, but it's great. I not only Penn State, but I am very much branching out too, especially covering a lot of the Big Ten, Notre Dame, other teams out there as well. So trying to expand my coverage. My goal is to be not necessarily, I guess, sometimes I say my goal is to be the biggest college football coverage that there is. I don't think that's my biggest goal. I think I want to be the best I can be at that. I say that because I don't want to sacrifice certain things. I don't want to sacrifice my marriage. I don't want to sacrifice my kids to be that. So that's why I don't say that I actually want to be the best necessarily, because that's not what I'm obsessed with being, of just being the top there. I'm obsessed with being the best version of myself. But I'm also obsessed with, you know, that's why I retired from football when I had my sixth concussion, because I went through stuff and I said I could keep playing football to try to go make millions of dollars, but I want to be a great businessman. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great father. And so why, you know, now I'm on a great track. I'm not even close to where I want to be yet, but now I can't just turn around and say, oh, I'm going to put everything into my media and forget the whole idea of that. I'm the biggest thing of why, what I want to come home to every day. I want to come home to my wife and kids every single day and have someone to share my day with and have kids that I, you know, just love with everything in my heart. And that's my biggest goal in life, but obviously also to be very successful in college football. So hopefully you guys follow along and hopefully you guys are along for the ride, man.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I can tell you, like, just watching your journey, I mean, the talent you have is undeniable. You're super easy to talk to, super easy to listen to. You're unbelievably talented. And it's very obvious to me that as long as you do that work ethic and keep at it in whatever domain you want to be in, you're going to fucking crush it.
So just keep doing what you're doing. I really appreciate you, man.
Of course, man.